This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell. Thanks for being with us this weekend on New Beginnings. And joining us is a wonderful individual from Oldham Rehabilitation Center. His name is Trigg Lundgren. Hello and welcome back to our show, sir.
Hi, Freddie. Thanks again for having me.
Glad you're with us. Now, you took over. You're in the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center, this where the Oldham Rehabilitation is. But that is a really, really unique space once occupied by the YMCA.
That's right. We've been here for about 5 years. For a lot of that time, we were able to have a great symbiotic relationship with the YMCA. Now we have the pleasure of continuing to work in this space, both in the offices that people might be familiar with that are at the back of that space where the Y was, as well as then in the therapy pool.
So tell us a little bit about the therapy pool. I remember taking a tour some time ago, and it was really unique, but I don't believe I know all the aspects of it.
Sure. So it's a warm water therapy pool. We keep it at about 93 degrees, so it's nice and comfortable to get in. Another amazing feature of the pool is that the whole pool deck, the bottom of the pool, is actually a treadmill. We can raise that whole pool deck up, and if people are worried about, you don't have to do that. You walk right out on it. We lower it down into the water, and depending on people's level of comfort, we can adjust that height or that depth as well so that people can be lowered down 3 feet, 4 feet, again, depending on their comfort level, and then we can advance that as time goes on. Like I said, that treadmill, we use that to actually assess people's gait, their walking, and then just the general benefits of warm water are a few different things. First of all, it helps to increase your joint flexibility. It decreases pain naturally, as well as improving balance and increasing your muscle strength. So we get a lot of benefits out of this pool. And Freddie, you and I were just talking. It's really an underutilized feature that we have here. We get people in there, but not as often as I think we could be or should be.
How do you know, or how would I know as a listener, if I'm a candidate for this warm water therapy?
Sure. So oftentimes it's the judgment of the physical therapist, but if you have joint pain or limited range of motion, and if you have chronic pain, therapy or aquatic therapy might be the right thing for you.
So do I have to go through my doctor to say, look, I want to get connected with Oldham Rehabilitation Center because of this pain that I've been experiencing? I understand they have aquatic therapy. How do I engage?
Yeah, so oftentimes that's the route that people go. But if you would like to see a physical therapist here in the state of Minnesota, you do not need a physician's referral. First, you can come directly to us, whether it's stopping by here, of course, or calling us at 612-505-1709. We're available to provide those evaluations. We're here 5 days a week, usually 8 a.m. to 5 or 5:30 p.m.
Talk about the insurance requirements. How does that work if I've got Medicare or maybe I don't have insurance at all?
Yeah, so First, on the insurance end, we take all insurances. If you have any concerns about that, we can double check before you visit to see if you have a copay. Most insurances that we have seen here, people don't have a copay. So that means you're not paying anything. Your insurance is paying for all of it. If people are worried about money and they do not have insurance, we do have a private pay option that is From what I've seen and the way that we've set it, it's well below industry standard because we really have a passion to be accessible, which is one of the reasons that we're here in the center with Cora McCorvey.
Tell us one more time. I know we've gotten into talking about the benefits of aquatic therapy, but how can our listeners reach out to you? How can we set the appointment?
Yeah, so if you'd like to contact us directly to set up an appointment, the number is 612-505-1709. You can visit us on our website, odomrehab.com, O-D-O-M, rehab.com. You can set up those appointments, and we are more than happy and passionate to serve you to help manage whether it's pain or deficits, whatever you're going through. Our passion is to improve your quality of life get you moving again and feeling good.
He's a clinical director. That's Trigg Lundgren of Oldham Rehabilitation Center. Thanks, Trigg, and you're listening to New Beginnings.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com. In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference, available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. By now, you probably know how easy it is to order up a ride or get food delivered just by using our computer or smartphone. Services that jump immediately into action for you are booming and diversifying. In 2019, for example, well before the pandemic, nearly 65 million Americans purchased an on-demand good or service that, according to a research firm, Rockbridge Associates. People are using these companies because they solve problems that were not solved before. There are some new categories, and here are some of the newer on-demand services that you may already be taking advantage of. Number one is you can handle your daily chores. TaskRabbit connects you with workers who will take on your household chores, including home repairs, gardening, and cleaning. Handy is another service that can help with cleaning as well as with various small jobs such as furniture assembly. There's another one if you want to move heavy objects, if you need to move a couple of big pieces of furniture. Dolly can do that and other tasks too. It can even pick up something you bought from a store. A service called Lug, it's spelled L-U-G-G, can assist not only with home delivery of items but also with small moves and junk removal. Do you need to walk the dog? Rover, or WAG, lets you know about neighbors offering animal-friendly services. Cleaning your clothes is easy, too. A company called Rinse will pick up your dirty clothes for dry cleaning or regular washing and then deliver them back to you. Likewise, there are some local providers who do laundry pickup and delivery. Do you need to get your medication? Nimble Rx, an online pharmacy, provides home delivery of medications. Plus, you can have some prescriptions delivered through Walgreens or CVS or other major pharmacies. Do you need to get your hair done? Soothe, best known for sending professional masseuses to you, also offers in-home hair care. Priv, featuring home manicures and personal trainers in addition to hair care, is a similar service that's now available in a few bigger markets. And how about washing your car? With Wash or Washos, someone will come to your home and give your car a wash, a wax, or even detailing. Washy currently provides services in Florida, California, Arizona, New Jersey, and New York. Washos is presently available only in parts of California. I'm Freddie Bell, keeping you up to date on some tech-savvy things that you can take advantage of right now. Are you on the go? As air travel slowly returns, I've got a step-by-step guide to boarding in style. If you're looking to book your trip, research whether you'll have to provide proof of negative COVID-19 tests prior to arrival at your destination. Go to covid19.state.gov, then click on country-specific information. Many countries have not been admitting travelers from the United States. Info on these restrictions is also available on this site. Checking in from home is really easy, too. Print your boarding pass at home or download it to your smartphone to avoid touching airport kiosk. Number three, you can set a schedule. Leave extra time for coronavirus safety procedures and screenings at the airport. Allow a minimum of 2 hours for a domestic flight and plan for 3 hours if you're going on an international trip. If you need a ride to the airport, you can take a taxi or a ride booking service such as Uber or Lyft so you don't have to use the multi-passenger shuttle bus from the parking lot to the terminal. And as you get to the terminal, put on your mask. Passengers are required to wear one except eating or drinking, and this restriction won't be lifted by the TSA until around April 18th. And then reaching the line, you can scan your own boarding pass at security checkpoints and show it to the TSA officer for visual inspection instead of handing it over. Place personal items in your carry-on bag rather than in a plastic bin. And then number 7, making it through security, remove the food from your carry-ons and put it into a separate plastic bin for screening. Liquid restrictions have been eased for hand sanitizers. You can bring up to 12 ounces. Remove it from your bag for separate screening. And then boarding the plane. Show your proof of a negative COVID test if they require it. If they don't, you've already got it ready. And then number 9, taking your seat. Sanitize the tray tables and the armrests. Many airlines are offering sanitizing wipes as soon as you board the plane. I'm Freddie Bell, keeping you up to date on everything tech and helping you to travel as our country starts to reopen. This is New Beginnings.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
So I'm curious, Reverend Stacy, because we decided we were going to have a conversation here, and this is not, what do I want to say, planned. We don't know where this
comes. Don't know what I'm going to say.
And neither do you, my friend. So I'm curious about that struggle that was going on in your life, that moment where you recognized what I know right now is no longer working for me, and you didn't know yet the journey you were going on. So kind of set us up for that. What was going on in your life that ultimately led you to Unity?
Well, before I get too heavy here, I was thinking as we prepared for this service, and I knew we would be singing Can't Help Falling in Love with You. Being trained as a minister, I think back a lot on my time in the Unity Seminary. And one of the scriptures I came across, which came back to me today, is from the book of Revelations. And it poses that question, have you forgotten what you loved at first? And that leads into my experience in Unity. I came into Unity in my college years, long, long ago. But I did so in a rather painful reason. I was raised in a church with wonderful people, and my ministers, they're in their late 80s, I still have contact by social media with them as they are retired in Charleston. And so I had a great deal of support, but the church in general was very traditional in its views, and by the time I approached my college years, I knew, due to a deep, painful secret, my sexuality, that I was no longer accepted, at least officially in the church. The official position was I was no good. And so I went seeking for a community where I felt it wasn't as much about conforming as it was about belonging. And I was in college in Houston and went to the Unity Church there. And very early on, during one of the social hours, many of you know a lot happens downstairs during our social time when we talk informally and in love with one another. And I heard a couple of women in that Houston church, and one said to the other, "Hey, I hear you're taking that class on astrology here at Unity." She said, "Astrology does nothing for me, but I hope you find what you're searching for in it." I'd never heard that before. I had grown up that there was one belief system, and if we wanted to be good members of the church, we all had to believe in that same idea without variation. And it seems so unlike humanity. We all are searching in different ways. And in Unity, I felt that there was a support for me to explore spirituality. And it didn't have to be exactly Kelly's or Patty's or Adam's, but yet we could respect and love one another as we each searched and wanted to be in this community. So that really was the significant way that brought me into Unity. And the story could go on and on, but I won't. Your turn. How did you get here? How did you get to Unity South?
Well, I got to Unity, and I can be grateful that I was aware of Unity because my mother had gone to a Unity church in Omaha, and so my family had moved here from Europe. We had never been involved in a church, and I was going through a time in my life where I was seeking. And it was interesting because I was in a position, very fortunate, to not have any sort of need. I had everything that I was taught I was supposed to have in order to have a fulfilling life. Family, house, you name it, whatever the list was. And I remember kind of standing in my house one day thinking I felt completely empty, like none of it mattered. I knew it mattered, but it wasn't filling me. And so back in 2000, I think it was 2005, I did what any person in 2005 did. I grabbed the Yellow Pages.
The yellow what?
Yeah, the Yellow Pages.
I don't remember those.
And I looked up Unity Churches. So thanks, Mom, for planting that seed. And it said Unity South had a little ad in the Yellow Pages. And I chose Unity South because there was a children's program at the same time that church was going on. And so I told my three girls to get dressed. We were going to church. And they said, "We're going where? Where are we going?" And I came in and I sat in the very last row. And I cannot to this day tell you what the message was about. But I sat in that back row and I cried and cried and cried. And what I understand now, I was crying because there was an invitation being made to me to remember the things that I had forgotten, but not consciously forgotten. And it's embedded in the Unity principles. There is only God, and God is good.
And therefore, you
are. I am good. And that is that concept. That concept, I am good. Wait a second, I'm part of God? I'm God? that blew my mind. I'm sure that kind of the same experience that you had. What? Very, very powerful.
Yeah, as a teenager, I don't know how I happened across Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on a Limb. Does anybody remember that? I know I was reading it on a family vacation in the exotic environment of the island of Mallorca. And here I was reading this book, and she was describing standing on the beach, catching that idea. I am God. And I thought, I could never say that in church growing up. I mean, that sounded like blasphemy. There are many statements in the scriptures about Jesus where they felt, I and the Father are one. Ha! You can't say that. But yet, unity, and of course there are other spiritual traditions, but I found unity. That I could say that. Not that I am the all of God, but I am part of God, as we all are. And that really shifted how I see people. Oh, it's still a challenge. And this idea of remembering what we loved at first about ourselves, about others, is a practice we have to continue over and over, because those of you that know me, I can get really wrapped up in the details of ministry and making sure all the routines happen as they should. And sometimes you forget, what's it all about?
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
In our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's Three Things.
Thank you, Freddie. All right, my thing one this week. Have y'all ever been on a college tour with your child? Well, my husband and I have 6 kids between us, and so we've done a few college tours. I suggest you start training for this college tour several weeks in advance, because I tell you what, every time, it never fails, it's a young girl. I have yet to see a guide leading the college tour, but it's a current student at the college or university, and they are talking a mile a minute and walking a mile a minute. Why they're not considering that parents of college-age students, you know, might have some physical ailments and walk a little slower than others, me, I don't know. But they seem to think that they're taking 20-year-olds on this college tour when really they're taking a bunch of parents who might be in their 50s plus and the kids. So I'd just like to say, could you slow it down a little bit? As I prepare to take my youngest son on a university tour in a couple of weeks, I'm kind of scared. Do I bring a walker? Maybe that would help them slow down. I don't know. I mean, I have nothing against exercise. It's great. But I'd like to see the university maybe at a slower pace, you know, without just running by the science building. And instead of pointing out the lounge area with the Starbucks, couldn't we make a stop there? So, prepare for your college tour, get your walking in, and right before you start, do your stretches, make sure you're in good shape, you have the proper shoes on, oh, and sunscreen and a hat or umbrella, because you never know what's going to happen outside. Yeah, those are Cassie's tips for a college university tour with your kid. Okay, on to thing number 2. So I came across this great story that I just really felt the need to share with you. Did you know that in Denmark, there are libraries where you can borrow a person instead of a book to listen to their life story for 30 minutes? The goal is to fight prejudice. Each person has a title: unemployed, refugee, bipolar, etc. But listening to their story, you realize how much you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. This innovative project is active in 85 countries plus. It's called the Human Library. How cool is that? I hope we have one here in the U.S. I'll have to do a little more research about that. But it's so easy for us sometimes to judge a book by the cover. I worked in retail many years ago, and we had a clientele that was usually pretty well off. And there were times when people came in and they didn't look like they had a dime, but they would be the one who spent the most amount of money. So you never know. Don't judge people by how they look. Any case, the human library, what a cool concept. And last but not least, my thing number three this week. I have a habit of sometimes blurting things out because my mind is going so fast as someone else is talking. And sometimes instead of listening as intently as I should be, I'm thinking of the next thing that I'm going to say. So it's something I've been trying to work on. I'm always trying to make improvements here and there when I realize things about myself. So often I just want to blurt something out in the middle of someone else talking. And that's rude. I don't like when someone does it to me. So I've been working on it. And my husband will probably tell you that I'm not very good at it. But in any case, I'm trying. And I'm experiencing the value of just taking the time and listening to the other person, taking in their perspective, taking in what they have to say about whatever's going on with them, and how valuable that is. Valuable not only to them, that you're taking the time to truly listen to them and truly hear them, hopefully, but the value to me, that I'm shutting off my brain. I'm not thinking about the next thing I'm going to say, but I'm thinking about what they're saying and focusing my brain completely on that person and what they're thinking and what they're trying to tell me. Or maybe they're just venting and they just need someone to listen and I'm listening to them. I think about all the times in my life that I haven't thought before I started to speak, and I'm trying to be more mindful about that these days. It's not always easy, but I'm trying. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Leibel Sternbach.
He's Amazon's best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. He's an accredited portfolio management advisor, an enrolled agent with the IRS. He's a National Social Security Association advisor certificate holder and a chartered financial consultant, a CFC, through the College of Financial Services, and he has passed his Series 65 and is a life and annuity licenses holder. And there's a lot more I can say about Leibel. And again, welcome. I am indeed in the presence of greatness.
Oh, that's nice of you to say.
Let's talk about elder abuse and dating scams. We have friends with AARP who all talk about the different types of elder abuse and dating scams. What are your thoughts on the prevalence of these crimes in retirement communities, and is it more that we're looking at it, or are these types of instances on the rise?
We are definitely seeing a massive increase in financial crimes. And I would say definitely, I don't have data specifically, but I think that there's been a significant increase or disproportionate increase for retirees just because they're the most vulnerable. Over COVID, it was like, you know, everyone started working from home, and the hackers and scammers just came out of the woodworks and, you know, went at it.
So more time on their hands to do more dastardly deeds.
That's certainly one way of putting it. I mean, they completely ramped up the efforts they were putting out and the level of sophistication of the types of scams that they're doing. It used to be, you know, pretty easy to spot a scam. You know, you'd get those emails saying, you know, I'm Prince from Nigeria and I need help. And everyone knew they were a scam. But lately, the emails that I've been seeing make me second guess whether they are legitimate or not. And the social engineering and the steps they take to prove that they're real is incredible.
Everybody, we're talking with Leibel Sternbach today, and we're talking about elder abuse and dating scams. So what do you think is the best way, Leibel, to protect yourself from becoming a victim of elder abuse or dating scams?
It is a really good question. What's the best way to protect yourself? I think that it's the same thing that you would do in anything in life, right? It's, you got to always ask yourself the question, does this actually make sense? It is what I'm doing. You know, if it doesn't smell right, it doesn't feel right, then it probably isn't right. And you got to double check yourself and make sure that what you're doing is 100% correct. And I think that one of the easiest ways just to kind of, you know, check yourself and know, like, you know, hey, is this legit or not, is just ask somebody else. If you keep, you know, the people who are close to you, you just keep them in the loop when you're doing something like this, or when you develop a new relationship with someone, and especially if they start asking for money or they ask you to start doing favors for them, right? Just talk about it with family, talk about it with your advisors, talk about it with your accountant, because in talking about it with other people, either you're going to realize that what you're saying doesn't sound right, or you're going to see in their reactions that they're going to be like, this is not okay. This is not normal behavior. And it's easy to get caught up in the kind of the emotional construct and the whole little world that these scammers create for you. So you need to, the easiest way to not get caught up in a scam is to allow the outside world in.
Leibel, what advice, if any, would you give to someone who is considering dating online?
So I have lots of great things to say for dating online. I met my wife online.
Okay.
Yeah. She actually rejected me on one website and said yes on another one. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all for online dating. I think that what you want to be careful with is you want to try to meet in person. And I know there's a lot of virtual romances, and especially, you know, if you're homebound, you don't have family around, you know, these scammers, they will get into your life. And that's not to say that there aren't legitimate, you know, people out there who will speak to you over the phone. And they'll develop, you know, relationships that way. But what you want to do is try to take it to the next step. The more physical contact you can have with them, the less likely they are to be a scam. So that means, you know, doing like a Zoom meeting and having those meetings with someone else present, right? When someone is trying to pull the wool over your eyes, it's easy to do it to one person when they control everything that you know about them. But it's very difficult to do that when there's two people there and one of the people involved does not have an emotional attachment to the relationship. They don't have an incentive to say, yes, this is legitimate, right? And I just want to be clear. These are very legitimate relationships, these dating scams. They're very legitimate relationships. They will develop loving relationships with you. They will make you feel cared for and loved for and listened and heard in ways that your family probably isn't providing for you at that time, which is why they have this opportunity. But at the end of the day, they want something out of you. It is not a true love relationship where it's you're both trying to support each other. It's a one-way street where their love is conditional on you doing things for them.
Very interesting. So you said it's a one-way street. So is that a typical red flag? And if it is, what are some of the others that people should look for when they're dating or talking with someone online?
Yeah, and I just want to give the disclaimer here, right? I'm not a therapist. I'm not a social worker. I'm not a relationship counselor. But in my experience, and at least my understanding, that if you have a relationship where someone is, you know, constantly putting demands on you, and they're not being respectful of your needs and your boundaries, that's an unhealthy relationship. So whether that's online or not, right, that should be a red flag to you when you say no and the response from the other person is, well, find a way, or you don't love me, and they try to manipulate you. And it doesn't feel like manipulation. They'll create a very needy situation. But the second that you start objecting to doing something, they're going to ramp up the pressure, and they're going to threaten to leave, threaten to take away their love. Right? Love is not based on I give you something, therefore you give me something. It's if you actually genuinely care about the person, you're going to want the best for them, right? Regardless of what that means for you, obviously in a healthy context. So a red flag is where it's a very dominating relationship, a very one-way street where they want things, and if they don't get it, they escalate. That's a red flag. Another red flag is if they try to isolate you from your family. That's something very common that they'll do. And again, right, we're talking, there's usually a legitimate reason for that to happen. You're fighting with your daughters, you're fighting with your kids, right? You're going through something with your spouse, and you start talking to somebody online, and it starts out, you know, nice and fun, and they're supporting you, and they're taking your side in whatever situation you're dealing with. And it feels like, oh, I finally found an ally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then 2 weeks into the relationship, or it might even be 2 months into the relationship, something happens in their world and they need you to do something. And it's like, yeah, of course, you've been here for me for 2 months. I'm going to do something for you. Except that thing that they ask you to do is going to be financial in nature, or it's going to be something that seems innocent, but isn't. So one of the very common schemes is what's called a money mule, or a, you know, romance mule, where they will build a relationship, and then they'll say, you know, hey, I'm getting a package delivered. I can't have it delivered to my house. It's going to get delivered to your house, and I just need you to go to the bank and deposit it, or I just need you to ship it out to the right place because I sent it to the wrong place. And it seems innocent, right? Like, oh, yeah, it's just a mistake, right? You know, and just a mistake, and I'll take care of it. But it's not just a mistake. They're having you be part of their chain in money laundering. And that's how they're evading the authorities. A real friend isn't going to accidentally send you a package. They're not going to ask you to deposit money for them in the bank. They're not going to be stuck internationally without any access to money. But somehow they have access to internet and phone to call you. Right? Like, that doesn't make sense.
Interesting. You know, I had an interesting situation where a long lost cousin of mine contacted me. He had all the right information. The only thing that was different is that he said he lived in Florida, of all places. And apparently he had taken the information from my cousin, and he was purporting or holding himself out liable as my cousin. And then, as you mentioned, a couple of months in, he asked me for $50, and then it was $300. Now, on neither occasion did I give him any money, but is this something that you're seeing, and how do you know? I mean, it was quite a bit of detail that this individual had. How can you separate the people who have this kind of information and make sure that you're protecting yourself?
So there are a lot of... Basically, everything about you is available online, right? Mm-hmm. It just is. If you know where to look, I can get your social security number. I can get your bank account numbers. I can get your credit card numbers. There literally is nothing about you that's truly private, right? And that's, you know, so it can't, in authenticating these people, right, in saying, yes, you are legitimately my cousin, right? It's going to be very hard for you if you haven't had, you know, consistent regular contact with them to be able to say you're my cousin and not a scammer pretending to be my cousin. Because if you think about the information that you would use to say, yes, this is my cousin versus this is not my cousin, most of it everyone has access to, right? Or they can find it with enough digging. Now, the really scary ones, right? And these people are insanely good at this, the social engineering, where I don't know if you've ever been to like a Vegas magic show where it's not like these mentalists on there and they're like, you know, this is your card, right? And, you know, and on the board we had written what you wrote down just now, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, how are they doing that? The key to most of those tricks is that they get you to give them the information beforehand. You don't realize that you're giving them the information. They write it down, and then they just appear to be one step ahead of you. And it's because of the way that they're presenting the information to you that our brain just kind of, you know, goes, oh, the story that they're saying makes sense. But the story that they're making us think is the story is not the story that's actually happening. And so really, right, the only way to separate these people is to try to do things that can't be faked, right? So Zoom, right? If you're talking over the phone, right, say, let's jump on a Zoom, right? And it's not just you, let there be someone else in the room, right? Because you are going to be excited about meeting this person who you love, who you've developed a relationship with, who, you know, you actually have a legitimate relationship with this person, and you jump on a Zoom and do it with someone else who does not have a relationship with them, right? Your spouse, your child, right? Your grandkid even. Because that person who doesn't have the emotional attachment will be able to spot all the little cues that we would ordinarily pick up, that if some random stranger walked up to us in the train station and started saying these things to us, we pick up that this is not normal, right? Because whether it's they keep tripping over things, or when they say, you know, they try sharing a piece of information and we correct them that they're wrong, and then they'll make us think that they originally said the correct piece of information. And so us, because we're in a relationship, will overlook that fact. But our kid, our spouse, or the person who we have who's not in a relationship with that person is going to spot it, and they're going to see a whole bunch of those as red flags.
Got it.
They're going to be able to spot that. And it's really, you need someone who has perspective, and you need to acknowledge that when you're in love, right, we're blind. Love is blind. And these people are insanely good at getting us to fall in love with them, getting us to push away the people we love so that there's no one else around us to tell us that this is wrong. And then they're going to pull out every piece of information from us possible so that it seems like they've known us forever.
Thank you, Leibel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Leibel's website is LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. And more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Dr. Michael Osterholm, epidemiologist, joins us today on New Beginnings. He's telling us that globally, COVID cases are declining, but we're still not out of the woods yet.
On a worldwide basis, COVID cases and deaths are continuing their downward descent, which has been a fairly consistent pattern we've seen throughout the past several months. As a reminder, during the original Omicron surge in January, reported weekly cases surpassed 23 million and weekly deaths reached 77,000. Compare that to last week's numbers, where cases stood at around 3.1 million, not 23 million, and deaths were below 10,000, not 77,000. And you can see where the past 4 months have taken us. Now, for all of you who will challenge these numbers, saying they are incomplete, that they surely don't represent all the cases that have occurred, all the deaths that have occurred, I agree wholeheartedly. But I think that the trend data does tell us a real story. For context, considering the following. As of this Tuesday, the global death toll for last week, according to the World Health Organization's dashboard, stands at around 8,000. Now, due to slight lags in reporting and the fact that it's somewhat early in the week, there's a chance that this toll could be slightly higher. Nonetheless, a weekly death toll of around 8,000 or even 9,000 would be the lowest we've seen since the start of the pandemic. And to help put that into perspective, just compare it to some of the daily death tolls we've reported in the past. On January 24th, 2021, average daily deaths from COVID worldwide reached a record 14,800. In addition, from November 7th, 2020 to June 28th, 2021, or a span of 233 consecutive days, the average daily death toll never dropped below 8,000. So while I by no means want to minimize any one of these 8,000 COVID deaths reported last week, It's certainly preferable to those times when this virus was killing many more than 8,000 people on a daily basis. However, at the same time, I still think there's a lot of progress that can and should be made. And I'm also aware of just how quickly this virus could wipe away any progress that's been made to date. So despite the overall pattern of declines, I think it's important to keep monitoring those outliers that are seeing increases or facing notable challenges from the virus, since they might best provide insight on where we stand moving forward. Never forget, we are still in an incredible tug of war between our human immune system and the evolutionary pressures of this virus. And between the two, we are still not quite sure where one day's equilibrium might actually exist. So in order to better understand that, let me just briefly run through a few different examples of what's happening internationally.
Dr. Osterholm, what's your read on what's going on in the United States with regard to COVID, and what do you think could be coming our way in the next few weeks and in the next few months?
Well, let me begin the answer to this question by making a very important statement, which by now should probably be old news, and that is, it is very difficult to predict things about the future when your crystal ball that you use every day has 5 inches of caked mud on it. Right now, average daily reported U.S. cases are hovering around 100,000 a day, and we all know the actual number of daily cases is much higher. I, for example, can continue to state for the past 7 to 10 days, I know of more new infections with COVID than any time in a similar 7 to 10 day period since the pandemic began. Most of these have been confirmed by lateral flow tests at home, or they're epi-related cases, meaning someone brought it into the household, and within 3 to 5 days, many other members were infected. So we know we have lots of transmission out there. We know that we're missing those cases. This is why I've continued to keep my eyes focused on the next best indicator of what's happening, and that, of course, is hospitalizations and deaths. Right now, the CDC's community transmission map that we've talked about is overwhelmingly red. This virus is definitely not going away. 2 weeks ago also marked the takeover of BA2.12.1 as the dominant subvariant in the U.S. At that point, the CDC was not tracking separately BA4 and BA5 subvariants that are now variants of concern. The CDC, as of this past week, is now separating the two in their prevalence data. BA5 made up 8% of the newly reported cases last week, and BA4 made up 5% of the new cases. BA2.12.1 continues to be a dominant strain, making up 62% of new cases. These variants are certainly something to keep an eye on in the coming weeks and months. I'm convinced, particularly what we've seen in Europe, that we will see BA4 and BA5 becoming the dominant subvariants within the next several weeks. Currently, the U.S. is reporting 2.3 new daily hospitalizations per 100,000 and an average of 29,000 people hospitalized for COVID in a given day, or about 9 per 100,000. This is 12% higher than 2 weeks ago. But if you take a step back and again look at the 29,000 figure for hospitalizations that we're talking about now and compare that to what we just saw in January, where on January 28th, we had 158,838 people hospitalized in the United States with COVID. Big difference between 158,000 and 29,000. If you look at the ICU bed numbers, they're slightly increased, with 3,100 patients in ICUs on a daily basis for COVID in the U.S. 11% of the patients for hospitalized with COVID are in the ICU, which has been consistent over the past month. And just again, let me remind you in context with the 3,100 patients in ICUs now, how that compares with that same January 28th experience when we had 26,249 individuals in ICU beds in this country. Big difference from 3,100 now. And if we look at daily deaths, they are staying relatively steady, now at 326 lives lost on an average day, which is 2% lower than it was 2 weeks ago, but far below the peak on, again, January 28th of 3,280 deaths a day. So this is all good news. Clearly, we are seeing lots of transmission with a much less severe picture at hand. And the question will be, with viral evolution and waning immunity in humans, what does it look like for the future? So let me get to your question about my take on all this. As I said at the beginning, I don't know what's going to happen. I can tell you that this pandemic is not over, and trying to declare it as such would be a huge mistake. It's deja vu all over again for me. Remember a year ago right now, hammered pretty hard, when I said in mid-June that I thought that some of the darkest days of the pandemic could still be ahead of us because of the unknown impact of the variants. I still don't know what's going to happen over the next 6 to 12 months. What happens if Pi and Sigma show up, which are very different variants than even Omicron, and ultimately have other characteristics for transmissibility and or the ability to cause illness? Just don't know what's going to happen. So right now, though, we are in a period of uncertainty with BA4 and BA5, and I really can't predict over the next 6 weeks how this is going to play out or how this could change the bigger picture.
Dr. Michael Osterholm joining us. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, that's our show for this week, and we have a very special thanks to all of our guests this week, and of course you. We wouldn't have a program without you being there as well. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for making us a part of your week. And for everyone who's been a part of this one, this is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.